Then, and then only, does the work of restoring the vehicles left on the bed commence, and the restored desire body starts to revive the vital body, pumping rhythmic energy into it, and that in turn starts to work upon the dense body, eliminating the products of decay, principally by means of the sympathetic nervous system, with the result that the dense body is restored and overflowing with life when the desire body, mind, and ego enter in the morning and cause it to wake. It sometimes happens, however, that we have become so absorbed and interested in the affairs of our mundane existence that even after the vital body has collapsed and rendered the dense body unconscious, we cannot make up our minds to leave it and commence the work of restoration. Will cling like grim death, is perhaps only half dragged out by the ego, and starts to ruminate over the happenings of the day in that position. It is evident that this is an abnormal condition. The proper connection between the different vehicles is ruptured in the first place by the collapse of the vital body, and further disarranged by the unusual relative positions of the higher vehicles, which has partially disconnected the sense centers of the former from the latter. And the inevitable result is those confused dreams where the sounds and sights of the desire world are mixed with the happenings of daily life in the most grotesque and impossible way. At times, when something in daily life has particularly agitated the desire body, it happens that when it has severed connection with the lower vehicles and is engaged in the work of restoration by the above-mentioned review, that when a trying incident of the day appears, and the desire body sees the solution, it will rush back into the dense body in order to impress the ideas on the brain, thereby causing the dense body to wake with a start. It is only in the fewest cases that it is able to bring back the solution that was so clear in the desire world. Even if it does succeed in impressing the solution on the brain, it is usually forgotten in the morning. There are times, of course, when dreams are prophetic and come true. But such dreams result only after complete extraction of the desire body, under circumstances where the spirit has seen some danger perhaps, which may befall, and then impresses the fact upon the brain at the moment of awakening. It also happens that the spirit goes upon a soul flight and omits to perform its part of the work of restoration. Then the body will not be fit to re-enter in the morning, so it sleeps on. The spirit may thus roam afield for a number of days, or even weeks, before it again enters its physical body and assumes the normal routine of alternating waking and sleep. This condition is called trance, and the spirit may remember upon its return what it has seen and heard in the superphysical realm, or it may have forgotten, according to the stage of its development and the depth of the trance condition. When the trance is very light, the spirit is usually present in the room where its body lies all the time, and upon its return to the body it will be able to recount to relatives all they said and did while its body lay unconscious. Where the trance is deeper, the returning spirit will usually be unconscious of what happened around its body, but may recount experiences from the invisible world. In ordinary life, most people live to eat. They drink, gratify the sex passion in an unrestrained manner, and lose their tempers on the slightest provocation. Though outwardly these people may be very respectable, they are, nearly every day of their lives, causing almost utter confusion in their organization. The entire period of sleep is spent by the desire and the vital bodies in repairing the damage done in the daytime, leaving no time for outside work of any kind. But as the individual begins to feel the needs of the higher life, controls sex force and temper, and cultivates a serene disposition, there is less disturbance caused in the vehicles during waking hours. Consequently, less time is required to repair the damage during sleep. Thus it becomes possible to leave the dense body for long periods during sleeping hours, and function in the inner worlds in the higher vehicles. As in the mind are not yet organized, they are of no use as separate vehicles of consciousness. Neither can the vital body leave the dense body, as that would cause death, so measures must be taken to provide an organized vehicle which is fluidic and so constructed that it will meet the needs of the ego in the inner worlds as does the dense body in the physical world. Part 6, Man's Desire Body in the Invisible World. Chapter 1, A Time of Death. The silver cord which has grown from the seed atom of the dense body, located in the heart, since conception, is welded to the part, located in the liver, that has sprouted from the central vortex of the desire body, and when the silver cord is tied by the seed atom of the vital body, located in the solar plexus, the spirit dies to life in the supersensible world, and quickens the body it is to use in its coming earth life. This life on earth lasts until the course of events foreshadowed in the wheel of life, the horoscope, has been run, and when the spirit again reaches the realm of Samael, the angel of death, the mystic eighth house, the silver cord is loosed, and the spirit returns to God who gave it, until the dawn of another life day in the school of earth beckons it to a new birth that it may acquire more skill in the arts and crafts of temple building. The serpent said, "Ye shall not surely die, for the God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as the gods, knowing good and evil." The latter was then unknown to man. Acting upon this advice, the woman secured the cooperation of man and by the power of will they freed their desire bodies. That faculty was then much greater than now, for it is a law that each new faculty is always bought at the cost of weakening some previous power, as when the faculty of thought was bought at the price of half. The creative force. Then the man's will power was such that the anxiety of the godless man eat also of the tree of life and become immortal was well founded, for had he secured possession of the secret of renewing the vital body as well as the dense body, he would have been able to create a body and vitalize it forever. Then there would truly have been no death, but neither would there have been any evolution. As man did not then, and does not yet, know how to build a perfect body, that would have been the greatest possible calamity. Death is not a curse, but a friend when it comes naturally, for it releases us from an environment we have outgrown, and from a body that ties us, in order that we may get a new chance in a new and better body to learn new lessons. When the moment arrives which marks the completion of life in the physical world, the usefulness of the dense body has ended, and the ego withdraws from it by way of the head, taking with it the mind and the desire body, as it does every night during sleep, but now the vital body is useless, so that, too, is withdrawn, and when the silver cord which united the higher to the lower vehicles snaps, it can never be repaired. The higher vehicles, vital body, desire body, and mind, are seen to leave the dense body with a spiral movement, taking with them the soul of one dense atom, not the atom itself, but the forces that played through it. Cremation should be particularly avoided in the first 3 days after death, because it tends to disintegrate the vital body, which should be kept intact until the panorama of the past life has been etched into the desire body. During life and in the waking state of consciousness, the vehicles of the ego are altogether and concentric, but at death the ego, clothed in the mind and desire body, withdraws from the dense body. As the vital functions are at an end, the vital body also is taken out of the dense body, leaving it inanimate upon the bed. One little atom in the heart is taken out and the rest of the body disintegrates in due course. But at that time there is an extremely important process going on, and those who attend the passing spirit in the death chamber should be very careful that the utmost quiet reigns there and in the whole house. The pictures of the whole past life which have been stored in the vital body are passing before the eye of the spirit in a slow and orderly progression, in reverse order, from death and back to birth. This panorama of the past life lasts from a few hours to 3½ days. The time is dependent upon the strength of the vital body, which determines how long a man could keep awake under the most severe stress. Some persons can work for 50, 60, or 70 hours before they fall down exhausted, while others are capable of keeping awake only a few hours. The reason why it is important that there should be quiet in the house of death during the 3½ days immediately following death is this: during that time the panorama of the past life is being etched upon the desire body which will be the man's vehicle while he stays in purgatory and the first heaven, where he is reaping the good or ill that he has sown, according to the deeds done in the body. When the man dies and loses his dense and vital bodies, there is the same condition as when one falls asleep. The desire body, as has been explained, has no organs ready for use. It is now transformed from an ovoid to a figure resembling the dense body which has been abandoned. We can easily understand that there must be an interval of unconsciousness resembling sleep, and then the man awakes in the desire world. It not infrequently happens, however, that such people are, for a long time, unaware of what has happened to them. They do not realize that they have died. They know that they are able to move and think. It is sometimes even a very hard matter to get them to believe that they are really dead. They realize that something is different, but they are not able to understand what it is. A cleavage takes place in the vital body, after death, similar to that made by the process of initiation. So much of this vehicle as can be termed soul, coalesces with the higher vehicles and is the basis of consciousness in the invisible worlds after death. In leaving the vital body, the process is much the same as when the dense body is discarded. The life forces of one atom are taken, to be used as a nucleus for the vital body of a future embodiment. Thus, upon his entrance into the desire world, the man has the seed atoms of the dense and the vital bodies, in addition to and the mind. Chapter 2, Causes of Infant Mortality. It is often asked why children die. There are many causes. One is death under the dreadful strain of accident, by fire, or on the battlefield in a previous life, for under such circumstances the departing ego could not properly concentrate upon the panoramic view of its past life. This is also the case where loud lamentations of relatives hinder. The result is, of course, a weak imprint of the life experiences upon the desire body, with an insipid purgatorial and first heaven life. In such cases the ego does not reap what it has sown, and so it might commit the same follies or sins life after life. To prevent such a contingency, the new desire body which the ego gathers before its next birth must be impressed with the needed lesson. The ego is always unconscious on its way to rebirth, blinded by the matter it draws around itself, as we are blinded when we enter a house on a sunny day. Only after birth does the consciousness return in a measure. Then, when by death it passes into the first heaven, it is taught objectively in a different way the lesson it should have learned on its outward passage in the former life. When that lesson has been mastered and impressed upon the still unborn desire body, the ego is reborn on earth and goes on in the ordinary manner. Children who died before the seventh year have been born only so far as the dense and vital bodies are concerned and are not responsible to the law of consequence. Even up to 12 or 14 years the desire body is in process of gestation, and as that which has not been quickened cannot die, the dense and vital bodies alone go to decay when a child dies. It retains its desire body and mind to the next birth. Therefore, it does not go around the whole path which the ego usually traverses in a life cycle, but only ascends to the first heaven to learn needed lessons. And after a wait of from 1 to 20 years it is reborn, often in the same family as a younger child. Now, when the 3.5 days immediately following death are spent by the man under conditions of peace and quiet, he is able to concentrate much more upon the etching of his past life, and the imprint upon his desire body will be deeper than if he is disturbed by the hysterical lamentations of his relatives or from other causes. He will then experience a much keener feeling for either good or bad in purgatory and in the first heaven, and in after lives that keen feeling will speak to him with no unmistakable voice, but where the lamentations of relatives take away his attention, or where a man passes out by an accident, perhaps in a crowded street, in a train wreck, theatre fire, or under other harrowing circumstances, there will of course be no opportunity for him to concentrate properly. Neither can he concentrate upon a battlefield if he is slain there. Yet it would not be just that he should lose the experiences of his life on account of passing out in such an untoward manner, so the law of cause and effect provides a compensation. We usually think that when a child is born it is born and that is the end of it. However, as during the period of gestation the dense body is shielded from the impact of the outside world by being placed within the protecting womb of the mother until it has arrived at sufficient maturity to meet the outside conditions, so also are the vital body, desire body, and mind in a state of gestation and are born at later periods because they have not hid as long an evolution behind them as the dense body. Therefore it takes a longer time for them to arrive at a sufficient state of maturity to become individualized. The vital body is born at the seventh year, when the period of excessive growth marks its advent, is born at the time of puberty, the 14th year, and the mind is born at 21, when the child is said to have become a man or woman, to have reached majority. That which has not been quickened cannot die, so when a child dies before the birth of it passes out into the invisible world in the first heaven, it cannot ascend into the second and third heavens because the mind and desire body are not born and cannot die. The ego simply waits in the first heaven until a new opportunity for embodiment offers, and where it has died in its previous life under the before mentioned harrowing circumstances, by accident or upon the battlefield, or where the lamentations of relatives rendered it impossible for it to gain as deep an impression of the evil committed and the good accomplished as would have been the case had it died in peace, it is instructed when it has died in the next life as a child in the effects of passions and desires so that it learns the lessons then which it should have learned. In the purgatorial life had it remained undisturbed, it is then reborn with the proper development of conscience so that it may continue its evolution. As in the past man has been exceedingly warlike and not at all careful of the relatives who passed out at death, because of his ignorance, holding wakes over those who had died in bed, which were few, perhaps, compared to those who died on the battlefield, there must necessarily be an enormous amount of infant mortality. But as humanity arrives at a better understanding and realizes that we are never so much our brother's keeper as when he is passing out of this life, and that we can help him enormously by being quiet and prayerful, so also will infant mortality cease to exist on such a large scale as at present. This is readily apparent as soon as we consider the gentle action of the vital body and contrast it with that of in a fit of temper, where it is said that a man has lost control of himself. Under such conditions the muscles become tense, and nervous energy is expended at a suicidal rate, so that after such an outbreak the body may sometimes be prostrated for weeks. The hardest labor brings no such fatigue as a fit of temper. Likewise, a child conceived in passion under the crystallizing tendencies of the desire nature is naturally short-lived. Becomes the arbiter of man's destiny in purgatory and the first heaven. The pains caused by expurgation of evil and the joy caused by the contemplation of the good in life are carried over to the next life as conscience to deter man from perpetuating the mistakes of past lives and to entice him to do more abundantly that which caused him joy in the former life. When those next of kin to a dying person who are present in the death chamber burst into hysterical lamentations at the time the spirit passes out, and keep that up for the next few days, the spirit which is at that time in exceedingly close touch with the physical world will be much moved by the grief of the dear ones, and will not be able to focus its attention closely upon the contemplation of its past life. Thus the etching made in will not be as deep as it would if the passing spirit were left in peace and undisturbed. Consequently the sufferings in purgatory will not be as keen nor will the pleasures in the first heaven be as great as otherwise. Therefore, when the ego returns to earth life, it will have lost a certain part of the experience from the previous life. That is to say, the voice of conscience will not speak with the same emphasis as would have been the case had the ego been left undisturbed by lamentations. In order to compensate for this lack, the ego is then usually brought to birth among the same friends who lamented over it, and it is then taken away from them while yet in the years of childhood. Then it enters the desire world, but since a little child has not committed any sins that need to be expurgated, its desire body and mind remain intact. It then goes directly into the first heaven to wait until a new embodiment offers, but this waiting time is used to school it directly in the effect of the different emotions, both good and evil. Often a relative meets it and takes it in charge, having the task of teaching it that which it had lost through the lamentation that person indulged in, or else it is taught by others. At any rate, there, loss is more than made up, so that when the child returns to the second birth it will have as full a moral growth as it would have had under ordinary circumstances had there been no lamentation at the time when it passed out. When a person passes out under untoward circumstances, such as a fire or a railroad accident, or suddenly as by a fall from a building or a mountain, or on a battlefield, or when lamentations of relatives around the bedside of the newly dead make it impossible for him to concentrate upon the life panorama, then the etching in the two higher ethers, the light and reflecting ethers, and their amalgamation with does not take place. Men does not then lose consciousness. And because there is no etching on the finer vehicles such as is normally the case, he has no purgatorial existence, that is to say, he does not reap what he has sown, there is no suffering in consequence of his wrongdoings and no feeling of joy on account of the good he has done. The fruitage of the life has been lost. To offset this great disaster, the spirit on entering its next earth life is caused to die in childhood so far as the physical body is concerned. But the vital body, the desire body, and mind, which do not ordinarily come to birth until the dense body is 7, 14, and 21 years old, respectively, remain with the passing spirit, as that which has not been quickened cannot die. Then in the first heaven the spirit stays from 1 to 20 years, receiving such instructions and object lessons as will teach it that which it would otherwise have learned by the accident which terminated it. So it is reborn, ready to take its proper place on the path of evolution. In the desire world it is easy to give object lessons in the influence of good and evil passions on conduct and happiness. These lessons are indelibly imprinted upon the child's sensitive and emotional desire body, and remain with it after rebirth, so that many a one living a noble life owes much of it to the fact that he was given this training. Often when a weak spirit is born, the compassionate ones, the invisible leaders who guide our evolution, cause it to die in early life that it may have this extra training to fit it for what may be perhaps a hard life. This seems to be the case particularly where the etching on was weak in consequence of a dying person having been disturbed by the lamentations of his relatives, or because he met death by accident or on the battlefield. He did not under those circumstances experience the appropriate intensity of feeling in his post-mortem existence. Therefore, when he is born and dies in early life, the loss is made up as above. Often the duty of caring for such a child in the heaven life falls to those who were the cause of the anomaly. They are thus afforded a chance to make up for the fault and to learn better. Or perhaps they become the parents of the one they harmed and care for it during the few years it lives. It does not matter then if they do lament hysterically over its death, because there would be no pictures of any consequence in a child's vital body. Next headline, Chapter 3, Purgatory. The ego after death gradually ascends through the various spiritual realms to the third heaven, and at the time of rebirth it gradually descends through the region of concrete thought, the desire world, and the ether to the physical plane. The writer feels certain that none of his acquaintances have ever mounted to the higher parts of the desire world or the region of concrete thought without first passing through the ether and the lower desire world strata, namely the purgatorial region. Purgatory occupies the three lower regions of the desire world. The first heaven is in the three upper regions. The central region is a sort of borderland, neither heaven nor hell. The mission of purgatory is to eradicate the injurious habits by making their gratification impossible. The individual suffers exactly as he has made others suffer through his dishonesty, cruelty, intolerance, or what not. Because of this suffering he learns to act kindly, honestly, and with forbearance toward others in future. The law we are now considering is called the law of consequence. In the desire world it operates in purging man of the baser desires and the correction of the weaknesses and vices which hinder his progress, by making him suffer in the manner best adapted to that purpose. If he has made others suffer, or has dealt unjustly with them, he. 79. will be made to suffer in that identical way. Be it noted, however, that if a person has been subject to vices, repented and, as far as possible, made right the wrong done, such repentance, reform, and restitution have purged him of those special vices and evil acts. The equilibrium has been restored and the lesson learned during that embodiment, and therefore will not be a cause of suffering after death. In the desire world, life is lived about 3 times as rapidly as in the physical world. A man who has lived to be 50 years of age in the physical world would live through the same life events in the desire world in about 16 years. This is, of course, only a general gauge. There are persons who remain in the desire world much longer than their term of physical life. Others, again, who have led lives with few gross desires, pass through in a much shorter period, but the measure above given is very nearly correct for the average man of the present day. It will be remembered that as the man leaves the dense body at death, his past life passes before him in pictures, but at that time he has no feeling concerning them. During his life in the desire world also these life pictures roll backwards, as before, but now the man has all the feelings that it is possible for him to have as, one by one, the scenes pass before him. Every incident in his past life is now lived over again. When he comes to a point where he has injured someone, he himself feels the pain as the injured person felt it. He lives through all the sorrow and suffering he has caused to others and learns just how painful is the hurt and how hard to bear is the sorrow he has caused. In addition, there is the fact already mentioned that the suffering is much keener because he has no dense body. To dull the pain, perhaps that is why the speed of life there is tripled, that the suffering may lose in duration what it gains in sharpness. Nature's measures are wonderfully just and true. There is another characteristic peculiar to this phase of post-mortem existence which is intimately connected with the fact, already mentioned, that distance is almost annihilated in the desire world. When a man dies, he at once seems to swell out in his vital body, he appears to himself to grow into immense proportions. This feeling is due to the fact, not that the body really grows, but that the perceptive faculties receive so many impressions from various sources, all seeming to be close at hand. The same is true of the desire body. The man seems to be present with all the people with whom on earth he had relations of a nature which require correction. If he has injured one man in San Francisco and another in New York, he will feel as if part of him were in each place. This gives him a peculiar feeling of being cut to pieces. The student will now understand the importance of the panorama of the past life during the purgative existence, where this panorama is realized in definite feelings. If it lasted long and the man were undisturbed, the full, deep, clear impression etched into would make life in the desire world more vivid and conscious and the purgation more thorough than if, because of distress at the loud outbursts of grief on the part of his relatives, at the deathbed and during the 3-day period previously mentioned, the man had only a vague impression of his past life. The spirit which has etched a deep clear record into its desire body will realize the mistakes of the past life so much more clearly and definitely than if the pictures were blurred on account of the individual's attention being diverted by the suffering and grief around him. His feeling concerning the things which cause his present suffering in the desire world will be much more definite if they are drawn from a distinct panoramic impression than if the process were short. It is possible for the so-called dead to form by their thoughts any article of clothing they desire. They usually think of themselves as being clothed in the conventional garb of the country in which they lived prior to their passing into the desire world, and therefore they appear so clothed without any particular effort of thought. But when they desire to obtain something new or an unusual article of clothing, naturally they have to use their willpower to bring that thing into existence, and such an article of clothing will last as long as the person thinks of himself as being clad in that apparel. But this amenability of desire stuff to the molding power of thought is also used in other directions. Generally speaking, when a person leaves the present world in consequence of an accident, he thinks of himself as being disfigured by that accident in a certain manner, perhaps minus a leg or arm or with a hole in the head. This does not inconvenience him at all. He can move about there, of course, just as easily without arms or legs as with them, but it shows the tendency of thought to shape the desire body. At the beginning of the war, World War I, when great numbers of soldiers passed over into the desire world with lesions of the most horrible nature, the elder brothers and their pupils taught these men that by merely holding the thought that there was sound of limb and body, they would at once be healed of their disfiguring wounds. This they immediately did. Now all newcomers, when they are able to understand matters over there, are at once healed of their wounds and amputations in this manner, so that to look at them nobody would think they had passed over in consequence of an accident in the physical world. As a result, this knowledge has become so general that many people who have passed over since have availed themselves of this property of desire stuff and have molded it by thought in case they wanted to change their bodily appearance.